music, news, entertainment. It's all right here. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We have two amazing bands on the show this week, starting with Montreal's Simple Plan, who have just dropped their new album, Taking One for the Team. We talked to Pierre and Jeff about the process of putting the album together and working with rapper Nelly and group Our City. Up next is actor Christian LeBlanc, who portrays Michael Baldwin on the number one daytime drama, The Young and the Restless. We wrap things up with the crazy talented West Coast band, Marianas Trench, talking about their latest album, Astoria, and building success in the United States. Happy to be joined on the Kelly Alexander Show with Jeff and Pierre from Simple Plan. Hi, guys.
Good. How's it going?
Very well. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it very, very much.
Thanks for having us.
So I wanted to ask you, it's been a couple of years since we've actually had a full-length album from 2011's Get Your Heart On. Did you expect it would be 5 years for the new album? Like, did you think it would take that long?
Heck no. No, I didn't think it'd be this long at all. You know, I think when we first started writing, there's always that that thought. It's like, oh man, yeah, like a few months to write and then we'll produce it and then within a year it'll be out. Yeah, the plan was to sort of put it out 2014, and that didn't quite work out for us. I think it's more important for us to put a record out that we love and that we really can stand behind from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. And that, with the years, seems to be taking more and more time because we've done more styles, we've done more things, and I think we're trying to raise the bar every time. So, you know, the bar just gets a little bit higher every time. So we wrote for over a year. And even the production side took a while. We started recording in 2014 or 15. It took about a year ago. Yeah, about a year ago. And it just took a while. It's just one of those things that just we want to get it right.
How are you guys when you're in the studio? Do you like to sort of get in a mode and kind of bang things out, or are you okay to sort of go and come back to things a little bit?
We did a lot of going and coming back to it. Okay. It's important for us to get things right, and sometimes you put something down and you feel good about it and you go home and you listen to it again the next day and you're like, ah, that didn't quite right. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite work. And we did a lot of, like, we actually changed some parts. We added some guitar parts later on. There's a couple of, like, bridges that we call that we changed completely. Mm-hmm. Some arrangements that we've changed. So yes, it takes a little more time, but it's for, you know, that's all part of the process.
You know, it was an interesting record because we try to make it as naive as possible, you know, mm-hmm. by living together again to make a record like we did on the first record. Mm-hmm. Things have changed, obviously. You can't reproduce that intensity and that moment where you're talking about music all the time, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit different. But at the same time, we all gathered together, made the record we wanted. After a week and a half, Sebastian and I, we were recording guitar. We were done. You know, we thought we had recorded the whole record, you know, and it was one of those moments where we just wanted to, you know, contribute as well as possible, as efficiently as possible mm-hmm. to the record. But the process wasn't that. The process was not, like, on the first record, the performances were difficult.
Okay.
You know, that was a challenge being in the studio. Mm-hmm. Now the challenge is, how can we make these songs better? Mm-hmm. How can we make a song like I Don't Want to Go to Bed coexist with Opinion Overload?
Yeah.
You know, so arrangements have to be requestioned. You have to really think about, you know, sonically how it's going to work. Mm-hmm. And you have to make a cohesive record. Mm-hmm. And that's not easy, you know, especially for Simple Plan, because people expect us to sound heavy, melodic, fast.
Yeah.
They also want to hear songs, you know, like the songs like When I'm Gone, like
yeah.
Summer Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
Those two genres, those two ends of the spectrum mm-hmm. have to be there on a record.
I wanted to ask you, because you guys mentioned that you were living together again doing this album, and I remember speaking to Seb a couple of months back, and he mentioned that you guys, that some are in the States and some are here. Was it challenging to get you guys all together again, especially because it seems like you have, like, you know, personal lives now?
It's not so bad. You know, we're based out of, Chuck and I are based out of Southern California now, and the rest of the guys are still here in Montreal, and we're here so often that it's not like it's that difficult, but we basically split the time. We did some videos over here, did some photo shoots here, we did some recording over there, but it's not that far away. You know?
Well,
we had recorded
two records here, and I think it was time to change it up a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. Being in a studio brings a vibe, and we didn't want to make another record in the same studio that we had done it, you know, like, for instance, for the fourth record.
Okay.
Changing it up kind of changes the energy. And the reality of it, too, is the producer we used, Howard Benson, is based in California.
Okay.
And it really was never a question that he, you know, he would fly in and make a record here. So it made sense for us to all live together down there, escape the cold, because we started in February of last year, you know. So
the coldest February since 1915 or something.
I don't know. What do you think about it? I didn't see it.
You missed it.
Good, I missed
you
it.
Guys.
Good.
Is this your strongest album yet?
I think we tried to achieve that with every album. I think, you know, most artists would probably say the same thing. But it's really important for us to raise the bar every time. And I think that I look at it as from a songwriting point of view and production point of view. I think that we have our strongest material. I think that songs like Singing in the Rain, I think it's going to be a song that people really respond to. There's some much deeper tracks that are stuff that we've never done before. A song called I Dream About You that's a whole new world of sound for Simple Plan. And even our heavy sort of traditional pop punk Simple Plan sounding songs, they hit harder, they're faster, they're more energetic. So I think it is the best record we've ever made, yeah.
I think that our deeper tracks, you know, tracks that are not necessarily singles on the record are better this time around than ever. You know, on the first record, you remember I'd Do Anything, Addicted, Perfect. Mm-hmm. Those are standout tracks, you know. There's some pretty average ones, you know, on that record. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that, you know, with the perspective of 15 years, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think this record, we went deeper, you know. Not necessarily having, I think on past, you know, on the past few records, we wanted to have 12 singles on the record.
Yeah.
On this album, we had our singles. We knew which singles were there. But we created tracks that served the purpose, mm-hmm. that brought you to an adventure throughout the record. You know, you had moments. There's deeper moments, like darker moments. There are songs that don't necessarily have single potential at all, but they serve a purpose on this record. So I think it's a more, it's a deeper record, and the songs are stronger overall.
How did the collaborations come about with Nelly and R-City?
Basically, I just feel like those types of songs, one of them being Singing in the Rain, one of them being I Don't Want to Go to Bed, I think we wanted to make them more exciting and to have a little different flavor to come in and keep it fun. So the idea was to kind of look for the right person, the right artist that could really complement the tracks. And for I Don't Want to Go to Bed, I think we wanted something that had high energy and would really bring that hype up. And Nelly was the first guy we thought about. And for the other song, Singing in the Rain, it's got more of that Summer Paradise sound, a little more Caribbean, a little more sort of beachy vibe. And this new band, R-City, have been out for a while, and they're from the Virgin Islands, and they live and breathe that Caribbean reggae sound. That's what they sound like when they talk. So it was an obvious choice for us. I mean, and they got some great success going on right now. So, and yeah, they really just they took the song and sort of made it more authentic and more exciting.
Now you guys are heading out on tour soon. I know you're starting out overseas. When are you guys coming back to Canada and Montreal? And how much does Montreal still mean to you? Because I remember watching an interview with Madonna once, and she said that even though she hasn't lived in Detroit since she was like a kid, Detroit means something to her always.
For sure. I mean, we were the kids passing in front of the Bell Center, and we were like, oh, we got to play that place at some point in our careers. So, I mean, when you do play the Bell Center, there's a sense of achievement that you'll never reproduce, however big the venue is elsewhere, you know? So there's that. And also, we live here, so your families are always like, oh, I saw you in the newspaper. I'm like, yeah, well, did you see the other magazine cover we did? No, I didn't. I didn't. I saw you in the local newspaper. That's what people care about. That's what you hear the most about. So yeah, it does matter a lot. We're going overseas. We're starting with Europe. We're going to do Japan. Our calendar's packed. It's going to be an amazing adventure. But we're coming back to Quebec for summer festivals this year. And we're also doing a full headlining tour in Canada. So Quebec will be definitely very well represented in the beginning of the fall.
Awesome. How much fun is it for you guys still to be banging around on stage together, like 15 years later? It's almost 15 years, right? You guys have been together?
More than that. And we've the band started sort of the first kind of, the first formation was like 1999. So it's been like, yeah, 17 almost. It's fun, you know. I think it's something that we've always enjoyed doing. And I think even as we get older, what's nice is that doesn't change. You know, being in the band, being on stage, playing the show, it kind of keeps us in that mental age of being 20, 21, 22. And there's no rules. You know, you go there, you have fun, you can make a fool of yourself, you can joke around. It's like the best job ever.
I wanted to ask you this. You guys have obviously been around for a while, but if you could go and sit down and have dinner with another band that's out there, just to pick their brain and just sort of see where they're at and why they're still going, or even if it's a young band, who would it be and why?
That's interesting.
I would. I'm a big Tom Petty fan. I've always been, and I know that some people that I know that have actually met him, and my wife is actually knows his daughters and stuff. And I'd like to meet him and have a little chat with him. I'm not sure if he would like me, but I'd like to. I just think he's got this cool sort of vibe to him, and he's a great songwriter, and he's always kept it simple. I mean, most of his songs only have three chords, and they don't need any more, you know?
Jeff?
I'd say AC/DC, and I'm actually probably surprising myself even, because I was driving here, and I was listening, you know, in the cab, mm-hmm. An AC/DC song came about. And in a way, they're just the poppiest heavy band out there, you mm-hmm. know? It's all super melodic, super fast. It's not the same genre as us, but I'd like to know, how do you keep it together, like, for that long, you know?
Crazy.
And how do you stay in a band with your brother? And then, you know, you learn a lot of tragic things about your brother, and you change the lineup, but you keep it together mm-hmm. because you know that's what your brother would want. Mm-hmm. There's something beautiful about that, mm-hmm. something amazing. So I'd like to pick their brains about a few stories, you know?
Awesome. Now, before I let you go, we have this game that we play, called Do You Know Your Bro? So we're making you put your heads on here. So which member of the band is always late?
Huh.
That's changed, actually.
That's changed over the years. Lately, I would say it's Chuck.
For sure it's Chuck. No doubt.
Surprisingly. So he was,
and he's not here.
No, exactly. But he's actually the one that's late. But he always has a good reason, because Chuck is not, it's not like he's late because he's lazy.
I'm working for the band.
He just
works
so much that everything he's doing is so important that the next thing can wait.
All right. What is Pierre's favorite flavor of ice cream?
Oh, God. I don't really pay attention because...
That's the most asked interview question. You should know this.
No, I know. I've heard it before. I don't know, actually.
Chocolate
chip
cookie dough.
Oh, come on. You know what? I just zone out when he answers those questions. I'm like, what's mine?
What is Jeff's favorite guitar... Or, sorry, who is Jeff's favorite guitar player, apart from himself?
Huh. Well, I'm going to say... You still like Joe Satriani, but I don't think he's your favorite one. Oh. Who's your favorite one? I don't know. Who is it? Do you have one even?
I don't really have a particular one.
As you get older, you don't have these what's your favorite color? What is your favorite type of food? I like all of it, man.
You know what? I like The Edge from U2. I wouldn't say he's my favorite. Mm-hmm. What I like about him is that, like, and all like respect.
It's his dotted eighth.
His dotted eighth. I stole so much from him. But he's limited technically.
Okay.
He's very limited technically. He doesn't he doesn't have chops. He doesn't play solos.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But he managed to be a great asset to his band, mm-hmm. and I think that's amazing. You know, like, he brought some.
Reminds me of you.
It's just me. You know, no chops whatsoever, but very creative.
Who can't live without their phone?
Chuck.
Yeah, definitely Chuck. Yeah.
I think I know this already, but what is Pierre's favorite sport to play and favorite sport to watch?
He doesn't really watch sports, but I would say football probably. If you do,
if I watch it,
yeah. If you watch, it's
were
probably
you happy
football.
With the Denver win.
Yeah, I think it was cool. I mean, I think that it would have been nice to see the underdogs make it, but yeah, I think it's nice for Peyton I think he's going to retire, mm-hmm. so to finish your career with a Super Bowl ring again, it's that's pretty amazing.
Pretty good. All right, and last question: if Jeff could time travel, which decade from last century would he visit?
The 80s.
Come on, Def Leppard, for sure.
guys, you rocks. Thank you so much, and good luck with the album, and make sure you come back to Montreal. We can't wait to see you here.
Thanks.
Thank you.
The guys, Jeff and Pierre from Simple Plan on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, what's up? This is Pierre.
And Jeff from Simple Plan.
And you're listening to The Kelly Alexander Show. I gotta tell you the truth. I'm full of broken pieces, and all my nights are sleepless, and I don't mean to intrude. This secret, can you keep it? Won't give up even if it takes me all night. It takes my whole life. Just won't feel right until I have you. Tired eyes burn. When will I learn? Tell me what to do. I don't wanna go.
go crazy without you. Every dream, every nightmare's about you. I can't lock, I love the first sight. Love the first night I took my first bite. I'm insane when I take aim. Like King James when the mid rain.
Love at first sight left me tongue tied. Just won't feel right until I have you. Tired eyes burn. Uh-huh. When will I learn? Uh-huh. Tell me what to do. I don't wanna go to bed. I don't wanna go to bed.
Find us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Click on KellyAlexanderShow.com.
We are very excited to welcome Emmy Award-winning actor Christian LeBlanc to the Kelly Alexander Show. Is it okay that I call you LeBlanc and
I
not LeBlanc?
I get to kiss people.
Or do you want LeBlanc?
No, LeBlanc. Nobody should call anyone That's what LeBlanc.
I always use you as an example, by the way.
Me.
Yeah, because I'm like, it's LeBlanc. And like, everyone's
bien
LeBlanc. Because Mr. Man from New Orleans. Right.
Exactement. I've been studying it because we're also le premier.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So, I mean, when I go to French for the television festival mm-hmm. in Monte Carlo, I throw every bit of French. Those poor people don't have a chance. In fact, I like the Sony publicities, have a great attitude towards publicity, and they believe it should always start with cocktails.
Nice.
So by that time, because I'm from New Orleans, mm-hmm. you lean into that.
Yeah.
You take advantage of
mm-hmm.
it. So we're at the party and the camera comes, big television camera comes close. And I'm like, viens. Mon petit chouchou, viens. Je voudrais. And then it was stuck. And Stephanie Bro, the head of Parisian publicity, mm-hmm. runs up and she goes, manger. She thought I'd ask for manger. So I go, je voudrais manger. Tous les gens de Nice.
Oh my lord!
And the man, like, you see the camera, and you see the cameraman's head. And look at me. And I said, I believe it was rencontre. I was looking for. But it was so funny. So I kept on. I knew a few more words. So I'm like, très délicieux.
You know, nice.
But I love it, and I love that I get to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Being from New Orleans,
yeah,
it's my culture. So
do you find that you get to bring some of your culture into the role? Like,
you know, at one point his sister, mm-hmm. the half sister,
right? Yep,
went off to Paris,
right?
So I said, no, I'm not talking to her in English. That would be ridiculous. She went to go study French.
Nice.
So I would interject in conversation.
That's awesome.
I wish they do more because we do. Australia mm-hmm. is our big market, so you'll have people going to Australia. We have Australians on the show.
Yeah,
and I would love to bring more of that in because I think it's amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Not shocking though that international markets are so important.
Right.
Everybody knows that
mm-hmm,
now,
mm-hmm.
And I think it gives it a great flavor. And I think the French speaking fans would be thrilled because we're in the islands.
Yeah,
we're here.
Mm-hmm.
We're in France.
Yeah,
why not?
Because I follow you on social media, and I love how proud you are to be where you're from. Like I always find you have that New Orleans flavor. There's some mention of it somewhere, or the paintings that you do.
J'ai une famille nombreuse à la Nouvelle-Orléans.
Okay,
well, it's a huge.
Do you miss being
casualties.
There? Like, are you happy to be in LA?
I have a place there.
Okay,
I have a place there, and I still have all my brothers and sisters.
Okay,
you know, j'ai huit cerebral.
Okay, nice.
They're eight kids.
Wow.
So yeah, all my nieces and nephews are there. And stuff.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm
how often do you get back? Like,
pretty. I go because I do a lot of charities down there. It's one of those places that, as a great coincidence, mm-hmm. our show. It's one of our major markets in Southern Louisiana. It does better than primetime shows.
Wow.
So, if you're going to be famous where your parents are.
Yes.
So they're both past, but to this day, I can hear my dad going, "Do you know where my son does?" To get a table. I'm like, oh my God. My mother yelling at him not to do it as he's doing it. But yeah, that's where it's really, you know.
they get the biggest kick out of it, but a bigger kick than I do.
That's awesome.
But it's also amazing. We've shot on location down
there. Yes, right.
So, and that was partially because you know, we have such a huge fan base.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. What does it feel like to be introduced as Emmy Award-winning actor Christian LeBlanc?
It hurts when they don't get it right and they say a Emmy instead of the Emmys.
Yes.
Trois.
That's right.
Not one or two.
And up against like Anthony Geary. Like you did it up.
Anthony Geary is such a... thank you for noticing.
I try to.
He is such... like, I'm glad he's retired this year. I'm like, Anthony, guys, stay away. Have a ball. Enjoy Amsterdam. But what an elegant man.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember... because I remember Luke and Laura.
Right, yes.
I never watched soaps, but you knew who Luke and Laura was.
Yes.
And when we first introduced, the first time we were up in the same category.
Wow.
You know, there's my name with... Tony Geary. Mm-hmm. That's the guy they saved soaps, mm-hmm. Luke and Laura.
Right.
You know, and what an elegant man. He came up and gave me a big hug. It's your year. It's your year. Then he won. I said,
wow.
You bastard. You. Damn you. But, and then the next year he won.
Mm-hmm.
And he had told me that, and he bowed as he came off the stage. He knew where I was standing.
Wow.
You know, and he just, it's just, that's class.
Mm-hmm.
Old de gamme, you know?
But you are in such a category where I feel like, you know, you're up against guys like him, Peter Bergman, you know, Eric Braeden. What does it feel like? Because I feel like even though their character is maybe bigger on the show, like just the
sure.
the nuance of them being
of
bigger,
course.
But Michael Baldwin is a badass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, at the end of the day, God, I hate you. That was Sean Kerrigan, ladies and gentlemen, who I love. You know, it's interesting because it's the quality of the stuff they give you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been very, and because these guys are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're in those categories. And it wasn't just Tony, it was Peter. And
yep.
Peter is Dr. Cliff Warner
yep.
from All My Children mm-hmm. forever,
mm-hmm.
Cliff and Nina.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm legends,
mm-hmm.
legends.
But you're a legend. I feel like you don't totally
funny,
are.
It's funny, but I never think of it that way. And I've gotten to the point where now I'm 20 plus years
mm-hmm.
in it. And I might be in that category. People are talking to me like, oh, he wins every year. I'm like, it's been a many years since I've been nominated, but I haven't won. But you're very aware when it's those moments.
Right, okay.
And you're also against my peers that have been about the same, you know, a new crop of people, mm-hmm. that, including me,
mm-hmm.
coming up, and they were combined in these categories. So it's fantastic. But I think I've been very lucky where people may have master storylines, just, you know, it's like victor storylines
yeah.
mm-hmm. all the time,
mm-hmm.
all the time. But they've given me such quality stuff that challenges me and terrifies me, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was one of those people that 20 years, you thought, 20 years? I would be too bored to do anything for 20 years.
Wow.
And they've kept me interested and excited about this character because I think he's just a beautifully placed character.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've had these troubles, and if you make sure that you play him, mental illness doesn't go away.
Right.
You find a process to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
When you've been cheated on in your marriage, you don't forget it.
Mm-hmm.
You try and forgive it,
mm-hmm.
but it always exists. And you, as a character, I love the challenge of carrying your whole history with you. And they gave Michael an amazing history.
Yes.
And then they brought in Greg Rickard as my brother. They don't have to bring a really super talented person in, but they did. People
yeah.
thought we were real brothers.
Wow. Yeah, it's for sure.
We looked at yeah. enough alike, and they give me a wife,
yeah.
Lauren Fenmore. And, you know, and they hear it, and it's just a accumulation of blessings, so that when I walk into a room, I remember a reporter one time I won for, there was a special Christmas episode I won for.
Mm-hmm.
I did It's a Wonderful Life, and
yep.
Michael was the guy. And one of the reviewers, and I know the reviewer, and he was trying to be, I think, a bit dismissive,
mm-hmm.
because they were wondering, it was a huge, powerful category. It always is. It's a difficult
yeah,
category.
Very much
actor.
So.
And he goes, all he did was walk in the room and react. And I went, thank you. He was actually, I'm holding the award, and I'm looking down
wow.
at him in the audience. I go, thank you. Thank you, you know, in the back room where they
yeah, yeah,
press
yeah.
interviews you. And I said, you know what? That's exactly what a good actor does.
Yep.
I don't have to do anything but listen
mm-hmm.
and respond to the people. And I had genius people, Michelle Stafford,
yeah.
Tracy.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant episode. And I just literally walked into different sets and
wow.
looked at people just be amazing and reacted to it. And it was really interesting, but it's that.
How
deceptively
do you,
easy.
How do you view Michael Baldwin? Because I view him as the anchor on the show. Like he just keeps everything grounded, I feel.
Thank you. I think that's... I'm going to write the writers about that.
You
know, make a phone call for me. I think what's easy, and it's kept Michael along too, is he's portable. A lawyer is portable.
Okay.
And so I get fit into different storylines. Mm-hmm. Even when I don't have a storyline, I'm in a storyline mm-hmm. with people because as a lawyer, and I do that very well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a fascinating thing. I do share that love of words okay. with him.
Yeah. Well, you can tell.
Yeah.
You can tell.
It's exciting. Yeah. I like that. You can get almost Shakespearean. It gives mm-hmm. you a little, when you're in a courtroom, you're in theater in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
But his moniker in his head that I have always made up for Michael Baldwin is like, I am the smartest person in a really stupid town. And it sounds arrogant and it may be layered of some other things yeah. above it. But that at his heart is somebody who he might be lovely, but the courtroom still gives him a place to be the bad guy,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which is just what a lawyer is sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I like the adversarialness of it, but it gives Michael that outlet to be for the darker side of him,
yeah.
the part that doesn't suffer fools. He's yeah. impatient with that.
And it's amazing how I find, like, there's times where Michael steps up to, you know, like, needing to save the innocent person or whatever. Yeah. But then, like, now with Adam, like, you have managed to, I think, even bring this peace to the situation where, like, people are like, okay, well, Michael does need to help Adam.
Yeah. But it goes back to, like, he was the underdog.
Right.
I like that they remind people of that, too. I mm-hmm. mean, he was the one that everyone thought should fry.
Yes.
Basically.
Mm-hmm.
So he understands that point. And you'll see there's a history mm-hmm. of Michael, besides earning money, all mm-hmm. of a sudden goes, you know what? No.
Mm-hmm.
I will not let this person be railroaded.
Right.
Everybody deserves the chance.
Yeah.
Because he knows what it's like to be the other person, mm-hmm. to be the evil guy in town.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was interesting. I remember reading that script, and I go walk in. I tell Lauren, who I'm having trouble with, mm-hmm. and she does not like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I say, no. Everybody gets their day in court.
And how do you feel about the fact that I feel like, because you've had, like, Michelle Stafford when she was with you.
Amazing.
I feel like you could tell off screen that you guys just probably really got along amazingly well. Was it hard for her to leave you? And then I know Gina's amazing because I also see that yes. rapport with you as well. But
Gina, it's difficult to step in for anyone, but mm-hmm. Gina's really done a great job. But Michelle and I are very close. We still are close friends.
Okay.
She just had a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to see someone leave. But Michelle, you know, you have to keep yours. You have to know when to call it. You don't want to walk around. And I think she wanted to try other things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that character on GH is
crazy.
Another,
it's amazing.
A big other thing.
Yeah.
But and she's wonderful. But she's also one of those people who she makes me a better actor when I'm acting. There are just some people that if you're, you know, going to go learn better tennis, go find a better tennis player.
Right.
You're not going to find it playing with people who are mm-hmm. you're as good as you or less skilled or experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm there, I'm on my P's and Q's. I got to step up. And she did that for me. And
okay.
I think I did that for her a lot.
It was amazing. It's almost like you guys should have been nominated just as a couple
yeah.
almost. It was
some
amazing.
Some of my favorite scenes. There are scenes where just Michelle and I are eating ice cream and talking as Michael and Phyllis.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have very many people who are ex-lovers.
Yeah.
And then become very, very close friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being with Lauren. We fell in love as adults with
right.
dark pasts.
Mm-hmm.
Each of us knew a dark place.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have, it's not ingenues. It's not,
yeah.
which is, you have to have.
Yeah.
It's not cute, young, and sweet,
mm-hmm.
meeting kind of innocently. This is two people who knew better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who recognized that they each had a past
mm-hmm.
and deciding that they want each other. And there was sex. There's always the sex.
There's always that.
I married the hot wife on the show, so I'm not going to say that's
we have to speak about Tracy, because you guys also have an amazing rapport. And I was sad when like there was like that maybe breakup, the cheating. I was like, oh no, they have to work this out.
We were sad. We would try some of those lines, you know. And again, we got the great writing. We got, you know, those things that you only say up to say to your wife. You know, you
yeah.
wouldn't say these horrible things to a stranger,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but you say them to your spouse.
Yeah.
And we would rehearse in the dressing room and we'd cry. I mean, it was awful. Awful things.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you. He knows what you look like.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
it's
those
crazy.
Horrible, but that made perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't. You don't. It's in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like they let Michael remember it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Months, years later, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, you did this.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, you did it.
I have to ask you too, because you've been on the show for so long and just in the daytime world for so long. Was it scary when all the soaps started to pop off? Because it scared me.
It's awful. I mean, it's hard because unemployment is the game. That's
yep.
what all of us in the creative yep. industries, but the world knows that now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just us. We're mm-hmm. used to being fired over
right.
and over again. But we just, everyone else caught up with us.
Mm-hmm.
But it was hard to see a lot of, you know, you As the World Turns was my home.
Right.
You know,
that's
where I grew up. And to see places like General Hospital or Guiding Light, I mean, after 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are pendulums that swing. I mean, one of my first Emmys in New York when I was on As the World Turns, or maybe early in my young, the rest is Another World went down.
Right. Yep.
Years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a creative destruction that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's always room for serial work like we do. And I think a lot of the primetime shows now take advantage of that kind of storytelling. You know, damages where you have one crime that goes through the whole season. So you can also bring in, it's like telenovelas, you bring in some great actors that only have to commit for a year. Ted Danson can only has to do it for a year, and it's killer. That kind of writing is amazing, and we have that. But yeah, it. But I think you just have to be better.
Yeah.
And it gives, our ratings are great. You know, we, it's in this fractured market.
Is it like 25 years now of number one? It's crazy. It's like something like that, eh?
25, 26 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell us what it's like to be on set with an Eric Braeden or a Peter Bergman, because you handle your own, like, and not that you shouldn't, because you, to me, you're all equal, but just because of the way the characters are.
No, you've got to go into the power structure of the show. And you know, Eric is the billionaire. That's Victor Newman. And it has to, and it's a very interesting work dynamic with Eric. You know, when you first meet him, he is the man. You know, you walk in and even if Eric is not is off or late or whatever, or you know, it been ill at home or what, he comes in, he steps into a scene, and you notice,
right?
Which is the almost the biggest gift you can have as an actor. He naturally has a presence when he walks in the room, and but what people don't know, you see this big serious guy, he's funny. I get him every time, and every now and then he'll sing "Springtime for Hitler." And it just makes me the happiest person ever. I said I could do another 20 years.
That's amazing.
With that kind of thing. He's very, very, very bright and very, very intelligent. So yeah, it's, and you have to, because he is really, he has a very different attitude towards his character.
Yeah.
It's a pillar of the show.
Yeah.
Nobody fights that.
Yeah.
But he also he also chooses that and he protects it.
Okay.
So you've got to fit yourself into that scene. You've got to, and he doesn't suffer fools. You've got to, you got to be on your game. Get in there and be ready, because he's not softballing anything. But I love it. I love that kind of acting.
Well, I love you guys together, because I finally, you're one of the only characters that can call him on his crap.
Yeah, they give us these really intimate scenes, and Eric becomes, and it's not, that character does not need to be vulnerable a lot.
Yeah.
You don't, he has chosen this persona very carefully, and he allows it to slip sometimes with Michael, which I think is great. It's a great for me, because it's interesting to see Victor in that position.
Yep.
But just that relationship, I find to be complicated, and it's singular. I don't have that kind of relationship on the show. You know, and I it's funny. And Peter is just the ultimate gentleman.
Okay.
And he and I are more equals, because we've been brothers before. If you remember when
Judith
was, when Gloria was married to John, I used to just ride him. Even offset, I'd go, "Hey, brother." Because we were half brothers at that point.
That's right.
I'd say, "Hey, you're brother." So, I mean, it's fun. But Peter, again, is the ultimate gentleman. And
amazing.
He is gracious, and, you know, he is approachable. But again, when you go in there, you need to be on your game. He very rarely makes a mistake.
Wow.
You know, but again, you couldn't, there's no point to being cruel to somebody who may be less skilled in the moment or may be messing up. We all have those days.
Yeah.
And some people, and I've seen it, there are the actors who just make the other person feel the mistakes they made.
Uh-oh.
And that's fine, but you don't have, it doesn't make a better scene.
No. Okay.
My job is to make somebody love working with me and give me their best stuff, even if I were a Machiavellian about it, and doing it just because I wanted to twist somebody to my will. It's smart.
Okay.
But I love actors.
Nice.
And I want them to do their best. I want them to want to work with me, and that's where their comfort level, and you can make magic, you know.
Before I let you go, we wanted to play this game with you.
Oh, no.
Do you know your soap?
Last time I...
So you're going to do this. Come on, Christian. Here we go. How
Genoa
many times...
City, that's all I know.
...has the great Victor Newman been married?
Oh, I don't think he even knows that. I asked. He actually stood there and asked him in an interview.
Did you?
And he says, "God, who the fuck knows?" Basically, I don't have any idea. Who? Nikki five times?
Yeah.
I mean, for, you know, Sabrina, Nikki. But, I mean, it's gone on so much longer than I've ever been on the show. Let me guess, 10.
Close, 13.
Okay.
So close. How long has your on-screen wife, Tracy Bregman, been on the show?
God.
You can do this, Christian.
I know, but she went off to B&B for a little while in there. So do you count those years?
Oh, it's true. I don't know. I'll give you a pass on that one if you like. But give a guess, though.
Let me do 18 years.
We've had since 1983.
That's almost me. That's almost me, because I was 1983. No, she's longer.
Yeah, so 32?
She's definitely. But she's gone on and off.
And off
contract, on contract.
That's true,
so
right?
It's hard to keep track. Because she was gone when I first came back to the show.
That's right. That's true. Okay.
Me and, Christine, all
that's
that
right. Cricket. Which I actually want to ask you about. So
Cricket was called Christine because I made her a woman.
There we go. So that you answered that question. I have to ask that now. And then final question. Michael was sent to prison in 2013 after confessing to the supposed murder of the hunky bartender. What's his name?
Admit to any of that.
What's the accused?
Carmine.
There we go.
And
so
let me
know
tell
your
you
soap.
when you're in a panic or something, you're late or anything, it came out Carmen all the time. I would give the opera. And poor Marco Dapper just looked me in the eye. Carmen, you son of a bitch. And he's like, what are you doing? It's awful.
Please tell me you're going to stay on Young and the Restless forever, because I can't imagine the show without
I'm
you.
I'm like Laura. I tell them I'll be there with the roaches. Even if they try and fire me, I'll be in there with like craft services, feeding them M&Ms to fatten them up so they give me my part because they're too heavy.
Nice. Yeah. How much do you work out? Because you must, all you guys have to just be ridiculous.
You know, all you need to do is watch yourself in high definition television once.
And then
that'll give you an eating disorder.
Really, eh?
I mean, I was always that way. The first time they gave me I shot my first close-up ever in my career. Mm-hmm. The director made me go out and run around the studio because I have so much. I was so energy, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Very hard time calming. You get to be still. Mm-hmm. And the camera's mm-hmm. here. So it became a strategy for me to keep me centered. But it does help to stay. I mean, this is not easy physically.
No,
you know, they can always put you in a fat suit. They can't really thin you down. That's then you get to
because you screen. Always look. You don't get your shirt off much, but when it is, it's like Michael's ready
yeah,
to go.
Yeah, shows that. I like that. Yeah, Michael's good to go. I like that.
Michael's that's good to it. Go. Always good to
always
go.
Always better to be a surprise.
That's right, Christian. Thank you.
Thank you so much,
Christian LeBlanc, right here on the Kelly Alexander Show.
Bye, Kelly.
Listen anytime, any place. KellyAlexanderShow.com.
So happy to welcome the Juno Award-winning Marianas Trench to the Kelly Alexander Show. Hello, boys.
Hey!
Hi.
First of all, you're also tall, which I appreciate. All bunch of cuties. Are you all from Vancouver, by the way? Because I actually had an argument with someone at work today. They're like, no, they're from out east. I'm like, no, they're not.
No, we're definitely
from Vancouver.
Yep.
Have you noticed a difference being from the West Coast, like when you come to Montreal or even east of here? Like, is there a difference in us Canadians apart from the fact
yeah,
we speak
people
French?
Are different everywhere you go. Sometimes it's just sort of like culture. Sometimes it's the immunity to any known disease, like Newfoundlanders and yeah. things like that. You
they're
see it all.
Tough out there for sure.
They are. They're
and
tough.
They can drink like mothers. Holy cow.
What do you like about what do you like about Montreal though? Because obviously we've got the French thing going on.
It's a fun culture. Like Montreal has a real vibe. Like it has a really unique character to it. Like, you know, there's great shopping, there's great food, there's just the feel of the city, and it has a really distinct look.
Yeah, more architectural distinction. Like you can definitely feel the European influence here. And yeah. we're just in Quebec City too, in that same kind mm-hmm. of vibe. Like this province is definitely the most European one in the country.
I also find it's a artsier city.
Yeah.
Do you find that Vancouver has played a part into how you guys are as a band, like as a culture? Could you have been from anywhere?
Culture,
like, could you? Yeah, like, or just like the gigs that you play and just being in the city. Like, has it seeped into who you guys are as a band?
I'm sure. I think it's seeped into who we are as people. Certainly. For example, we all love the rain, which is weird.
like nature, you know, maybe more than yeah. average, I guess, because there's lots of cool things you can do in Vancouver, and you can do it year round. So.
And how was it like being on tour in the States for the last, like, was it 6 weeks? And I love that Montreal was, like, one of your only Canadian stops on this part of the tour.
It was awesome. It was really encouraging. It feels like we're kind of, like, finally hitting the tipping point in the United States, which is awesome because we've been working at it for a long time.
The song just cracked the top 40 in the U.S. yesterday, which is, you know, it was the first time we've done that. So that's good. It was great news to hear.
Is it important, like, when you guys started as a group that, like, to crack the U.S.? Because a lot of Canadian bands can't quite do it. Like, they'll do very well here, and then they go to South, and, like, it's like, who are you?
Well, I mean, I think it's always important to have your aspirations be as big as possible. You know what I mean? So I think anytime that you're connecting with any audience at all, you have to be grateful for it and appreciative of it. But yeah, I mean, I think everyone wants to break into the United States. I mean, it's just more people to sell records to, right? And
which means we get to continue making records.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. Talk to us about Astoria, because I know it started off as going to be like an 80s themed sort of situation. Then I know some of your personal life came into it. How much has the record evolved by the time you started to when you finish and where we are now?
A lot. I don't know. I mean, it definitely stayed with the retro 80s thing for sure.
It actually felt like it took more shape as it went, and it became more distinctly clear what the sort of
the artistic direction was going to be.
Yeah.
It was just a matter of content and being ready to do that.
I think. Good. We're good with that answer.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I agree. Do you guys find that Mariana's Trench sounds different than other Canadian bands? Because I'm fortunate where I get to play you guys all the time. I get to play Headley. We've played Neverus, like, on the station I work for. But you guys always, to me, are like a little bit left of everybody else. Do you guys feel that?
I think so. I mean, I think we strive to be. I think, as an artist, you want to have your own unique voice and perspective. And I'm not really interested in trying to sound like other bands. Like, there are some artists who are our contemporaries who, you know, hear a hit song on the radio and then just go, okay, well, let's do something that sounds exactly like that because that worked for that person. And I just find that not artistically interesting. You know what I mean? I prefer to just, like, try a bold concept and swing for the fences.
What's it like being on stage with you guys? Like, what do you want the audience to pick up? And when you're on stage, Josh, and you're singing out front, do you pick out specific people in the crowd?
I try and make eye contact with everybody if I can. When it's a bigger venue, like when you're doing arenas, the difficult thing is like, as a performer, you want to connect with the audience for sure. When you get into arenas and stuff, the difficult thing is you want to connect with the people way back there and way back there, and you have to make an effort to really include everybody in the show. And just engage. But I love the challenge of it. It's like that scene in Almost Famous when Jason Lee is like, I find the one guy in the audience who's not getting off and I make him get off. You know what I mean? From our perspective, you want to see everyone in the audience connecting and getting excited, you know? And you, as a performer, you want to emote as much as possible.
Mike? Oh, Ian?
Sometimes I'll try and... A friend told me what his inspiration was and mm-hmm. what he'll do. And I try and do it at the same time. Like, if... Just try and put as much into the show as possible. Mm-hmm. So I'll try and find the guy, if I can see him,
yep.
or girl or whatever, at the back, who's just kind of standing like this, who's just like just standing, right? And I try and get him moving in some type, that's, you know, in some way or another.
Were you listening to Josh?
Yes.
So Ian does the same thing.
Is it true that when you play Los Angeles, because I've heard this from other artists, that Los Angeles is a really tough crowd to get going because they see everybody all the time?
No, I didn't. I don't find that.
Yeah, we seem to get a pretty strong reaction there.
Yeah.
Although people say that about a lot of places that we go.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I love playing LA. It's tons of fun. Plus, like, to me, you're coming in and you're trying to channel the Sunset Strip, you know what I mean? Like, you know, especially because we're doing this whole 80s thing, like, that's one of the perfect places for us to play. It's awesome.
I read in the write-up that Eurythmics was inspirational for this album. Were they? And is there, like, what other 80s people?
Well, before we would work every day, I would listen to a different vintage vinyl through. And I drew inspiration from a lot of places, like the Eurythmics and Tears for Fears and George Michael, Huey Lewis, Michael Jackson,
Kenny Loggins,
Prince, Bryan Adams, just like Bon Jovi.
John Farnham.
Yes.
As a group, who would you like to perform with the most out of that group if you could? Like, who would you be like, let's collaborate with this dude?
Probably get booed
Kenny
off
Loggins.
The stage, but MJ would be the best.
Well,
we might get booed off the stage. You know?
We definitely would.
When you guys are hanging out, are you guys the best of friends all the time? Because Jacob Hogard once said in an interview that being in a band that's the hardest part of being in a band, is being in a band. Is that true?
It's different for us. I hear a lot about that bands that they have a lot of conflict and stuff with them because they're forced to be together, but we actually all get along really well. We see when somebody needs space and let them have the space, but they're actually, like, even on this run, there's been almost none of that. Everybody's just happy. We're happy.
Super supportive these days. Like, just, you know, if you could tell someone's having a rougher day or harder, because it's hard on the road. You get really tired. You try and just give them a little pick-me-up, whether, you know, not directly, but just indirectly. You just try and do little things to make their job easier. Or if, you know, someone can't make it to, like, oh, they can't do the interview this day, you're like, okay, I got it, kind of thing, you know, so.
We used to beat everybody up while they were sleeping in the middle of the night. Who were the first one to bed was, like, the last one to ride, yeah.
Do you guys have a ritual before you actually hit the stage? Like, right before, do you high five? Do we roll around the floor?
We have a band chant. Yeah, we have a chant. Yeah, it's a top secret, though.
That's fine. Okay, I just wanted to know if you guys actually do that. And I wanted to know, with regards to songwriting, it sounds like on this album, obviously, you do a lot of it, and these guys were a bit more collaborative this time around. What's it like sort of being supportive and knowing you've got this team behind you?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, it's a huge part of the sound of our band, and specifically this record. I mean, even though if it's me writing the songs, like you are trusting the opinions of the other people in the band as the sounding board, and I think this time around it was a really sort of safe environment for everyone to put in their ideas, and it was like, okay, let's chase this idea for a couple of days, and it didn't work. Let's try that. You know what I mean? No one takes it personally.
How long does it take for you guys to write a song? Like, do you guys have like a breaking point where like 2 hours, like, nope, it's not happening, and then you bail on it?
I think it is unpredictable how long a song can take. Sometimes they come together really easy, and sometimes they don't. Like One Love came to me like that, like actually like that. Like I walked from, I had nothing. I was doing something completely unrelated. Yeah. And I was actually talking to the girl that song was about, and then she left, and I closed the door, and I walked, and I sat down at the piano and just played and sang the whole chorus, like that. So that was like a 20-second span. But other songs, like there's another song on the record called Wildfire, that the music and melody I wrote 15 years ago, and I was just waiting for the right chorus to present itself, and it finally did.
What song do you guys like performing the most? Because I know, like, for all of us, we obviously love the singles. I think a lot of fans, because that's the one that we hear on the radio all the time, and that's sure. What it is. But I always feel like a band, it's probably like an album track that we don't even know. Is that true?
We get a ton of enjoyment out of playing the opener and the closing tracks for the record. They are, like, excuse me, musically very challenging for us, and just you got to be on your toes when you're working your way through them live. And to hear them come together is very rewarding, because, like, they're, you know, it's a very long, arduous process putting them together in the studio, and to make them translate in a live setting is pretty exciting.
How important? Oh yeah, go ahead.
For me, it's the last song, because there's about a 3-minute period where I don't have to do anything, and I just go and stand in the shadows pretending I'm getting all emotional.
Just brood in the back.
Yeah.
Mike, I want to know what it's like to be a bass player in a band. What's it like?
Easy.
Is it? Tell me, Mike.
You know, I haven't really been anything else in a band, but it's very, very hard to take this kind of abuse from. These guys all the time, because I only use one note and one string at a time.
Josh, I have to ask you, as the front man, do you feel like an extra added pressure? Because you are, I mean, I think actually with you guys, though, everybody knows each of you in the band. I really feel that. There's other bands where it's like, who's the bass player? Who's the drummer? Like, no one knows. But I feel like this guy.
See what I mean?
But like, is there an added pressure knowing that you are kind of out front, even though they're right there with you?
Yes and no. Like, I think there's an added pressure of having to be like to me, it's more about like saving my voice and like making sure I can sing the show every day, because it's quite challenging. And definitely there is the pressure of like, you know, when it comes up is when something goes wrong, and which is inevitably going to happen, right? Yeah. When something goes wrong and someone's like, okay, this isn't working, and people are running around backstage to plug stuff back in. Now it's my job to talk to the audience and just charm the audience for a few minutes, talking about whatever comes to mind.
Well, and you never know how long the story's got to be, so you sort of stretch, wrap it up.
Yeah, and I'll hear like in my ears, I can hear them being like, fill time, Josh, keep going, and meanwhile I'm just like, so how are you guys? Hey, you in the front row, how are you doing? Let's have a chat.
So you're like amateur comedian now?
Well, sometimes.
Before I let you go, two questions. First of all, how important is social media and your fans to you? Especially now, because I know when I was a kid, I couldn't reach out to my bands. It was like, took forever, and you wrote a note maybe somewhere in Los Angeles. But now everyone can just go back and forth.
Yeah, social media is very, very, very significant part of our sort of, I don't know, just how we connect. The fans, like, we also repost some of their pictures and things like that, so they know that we're seeing what they're posting. Yeah. But it also gives us a chance to show a lot of what's going on behind the scenes, or a little bit of our experiences. And they, our fans in particular, engage a lot with that. You can just see the percentages of, like, statistically, it seems to work well for us.
Awesome. Now, I have a quick game you have to play. A couple of questions. Do you know your bro? You ready for this? Yep. So, I don't know who's going to answer this, but what is Josh's middle name?
Oh, can we say
come
it?
On.
We all know
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, come on.
Dare.
No, we can't. Okay, all right.
But we do all know it.
It can't
yeah.
be bad. My name is Muriel, my middle one.
No, it's worse.
It's worse than that?
Oh, yeah.
It's a last name, so it's not
it?
Really like a first name.
But then you just need to own it, Josh. You just own it.
It's too late now after you know that we don't want it.
Okay. What is Matt's favorite breakfast cereal?
Vector.
Nice. This is great. What is Ian's favorite TV show these days?
Law and Order.
Good stuff. Who is Mike's celebrity crush? Does Mike have a celebrity crush? Is there like an...
I don't know if I have one.
You don't know if you have one? Everyone has one, no?
Well, I haven't talked about it.
Okay, who is Josh's favorite group of all time?
Jellyfish, I guess.
Very good. Is Matt a boxer or a brief guy?
Boxer briefs.
See him every day.
Yeah. Is Ian right or left-handed?
Right.
There we are. And what is Josh's favorite song to sing out of all of your albums?
Like, he doesn't have one.
He doesn't have one. So you'll sing. That's awesome. So you'll sing anything out of your repertoire. That's good.
As long as my voice is working, then that's actually my fave.
He probably would actually like the ones that are the hardest to sing if his voice is rocking.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's, you can get under it, just give her.
You have a rocking voice, by the way, so I just thought I'd say that. Boys, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Marianas Trench hanging out on the Kelly Alexander Show.
I wake up tonight feeling paper thin and I'm paper white. You say just come back to bed. Voice sounds strange, but I soon forget. And your sad blue eyes like mine, full of pity now, but I don't know why. The light dims without regret. Till now you're nothing more than a silhouette. But just hold quick, you're fading bright in a cold trick of the light. I'm just so sick, I thought you might be here, but you did disappear. Now I wake up and I forget that you were gone. A phantom limb is all that I'm hanging on. So don't stop, no stopping yet. What if the true love's the only one that you get? And you've been wishing, but you don't know how to stay. And I've been broken, but I'm better every day. So don't stop, no stopping yet. What if the one true love's the only one that you get? One love. Time, but I live with that. I might do this to myself. Only made it worse, but I just can't help. You know I get so attached. Listen every day till the dark is back. Now I pine for phantom pain. It's the only time that I see your face. So just hold quick, you're fading right in a cold trick of the light. I'm just so disappear. Now I wake up and I forget that you were gone. A phantom limb is all that I'm hanging on. So don't stop, no stopping yet. What if the one true love's the only one that you get? And you've been wishing, but you don't know how to stay. And I've been broken, but I'm better every day. So don't stop, no stopping yet. What if the one true love's the only one that you get? One love.
The Kelly Alexander Show. Follow us on Instagram, Kelly Alexander Show.
We really appreciate you spending time with us on the show this week, and a big thank you going out to Simple Plan, Marianas Trench, and Christian LeBlanc. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from actress Drew Barrymore. Life is very interesting. In the end, some of your greatest pains become your greatest strengths. Have an awesome week. Please make sure to check us out on our social media. You can find all of them on our website, kellyalexandershow.com, and our YouTube channel, youtube.com/kellyalexandershow. You and I will chat soon.